Okay.
I am recording.
Yeah, normally I'm able to see the host and be able to mute, but I cannot. It's not giving me that option right now either.
So, Andrea, it sounds like we are good to go.
Yes, we are now recording,
I think.
Okay, as we get going through the meeting and get started after we do roll call, Andrea, if you wouldn't mind, I don't know, looking in, as the host, you might be the only one who can unmute.
Right. Okay, there. Katie, I also made you a co-host, so you should be able to do it. My plan is just to read the names as they are listed.
Okay, I will open the meeting officially and just ask Andrea and Katie if you don't mind working on trying to figure out how to unmute. And Katie doesn't have access to it, and somebody else, so if you press the space bar, it can mute or unmute. I don't know if that works for everyone, but it's worth a try.
I know that it's preferable for the recording to have everybody verbally say that they are present, just for compliance purposes. But given that we're having a little bit of issue here, if I read your name and you wave at me, I'm going to say you waved at me. Okay.
And as far as I know, as the host, if you look at the list of attendees and participants, the host should be able to click unmute. So it might come up.
Maybe
we will work on trying to make sure you can unmute, because we'd like everyone to be able to.
It's telling me I need to ask everyone to unmute, so I'm going to do that for everyone that is muted.
Okay, yeah, go ahead and just read through the roll call based on who you see on the screen.
Great.
First, I'm going to open the meeting officially. Welcome. This is the Regional Growth Committee meeting for the Wasatch Front Regional Council on May 21st. We appreciate each of you being here and your patience with our technology. And for the benefit of the recording, we are going to ask Andrea with WFRC to read the roll call as listed. Please, oh good, looks like the unmute is working. That is good news. That's good. And now each of you should be able to control your own mute and unmute, hopefully. Anyway, when Andrea calls your name, please respond that you're here with us so we can make sure we get a forum and put on the public record who we have here with us. Andrea, go ahead.
Thank you. Mayor Ramsey.
Here.
Gary Risk.
Here.
Reed Ewing.
Here.
Steve Call.
Here.
Andrea Olson.
Here.
Christopher Chestnut.
Here.
David Ward.
Here.
Dina Blaze.
Here.
Julie Fulmer.
Here.
Mayor Arvey.
Here.
Mayor Allen.
Here.
Mayor Gandoy.
Here.
Oh, and it just shifted for me. Mayor Bigelow.
Here.
Councilmember Winder Newton.
Here.
Carlton Christensen.
Here.
Evan Curtis.
I'm here.
And it's showing in Vision Utah, so it's probably either Ari or Ryan.
Ari.
Ryan's here too.
Oh, great. Commissioner Thomas.
Here.
Oh, people keep jumping in. Richard Brockmeyer.
Here.
Mayor Gandoy. I might be duplicating. It's shuffled. Russ Fox.
Here, Draper.
Russell Weeks.
Yeah.
J.C. Skinner. Council Member Shields.
Here.
And then there are various WFRC people online. If I did not call your name, please type it in the chat. Mayor, we have a quorum. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Thank you. And thank you to all of you for being here with us. Okay. We got started a little late, and I did not note the time that we started. It was about 9:55 a.m. because of our technology, but We're going to start with our consent agenda. We have item one on the agenda. We need to approve the minutes from the Regional Growth Committee meeting held March 19th, 2020. Those have been sent out and hopefully you've had a chance to review those. Is there anyone who would like to make a motion to approve those minutes?
Mayor, if you could, Amy Winder Newton, I'll make a motion to approve.
Thank you. We have a motion by Amy Winder Newton. Is there a second? And you can feel free to wave so I can see you. We've got a couple pages of people that we're all trying to see and navigate, or you can just unmute.
This is Tina Cannon. I will second.
Thank you. All right, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from the Regional Growth Committee meeting held March 19th, 2020, please say aye.
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 Any?
Aye.
Those minutes are approved, thank you. Okay. You know, real quick before we jump in and open our public comment, I just want to take a minute to really say thank you. What an interesting time this has been for all of us. And since we met last time, everything has changed. Things around the world, and we have a little better understanding of what we're dealing with this COVID-19. And now we've seen significant changes in the economy and in everything else. I want to say thank you and say how much I appreciate the chance that we have to work together as we try to go forward and figure out what things we need as far as the planning done by Wasatch Front Regional Council and the role that we have as the Regional Growth Committee. We are facing some unique challenges that we don't really know what they look like. We don't know exactly what the future will look like, but this is a group of experts and people who really care, and I do appreciate the chance to serve with each of you and look forward to making decisions that will help shape what our community and this whole Wasatch Front area that we all love so much and that we all have a stake in look like as we move into recovery and into the new future that we face. So my hope is that you're all safe and healthy, and that we can work together to continue to be healthy and protect our most vulnerable, especially, and also all of our economy. I'm going to next open the public comment. If members of the public would like to address the Regional Growth Committee, the time is now yours. I'm skipping back and forth between the pages, and watching that as well, and I'm not seeing anyone. I am hearing someone who is not muted, so if everyone might be too long. I can't do anything about it. All right, I'm not seeing anyone. Okay, seeing no one, we will close the public comment portion of this meeting and move to item four, which is amendment one. Okay, Andrea, can you maybe try to push mute on Joy? That's what it says is coming up with the. Thank you. Okay, item four is the amendment one to the regional transportation plan, which we affectionately refer to as the RTP. You all know that's our 30-year blueprint for regional transportation infrastructure, and that it's part of Utah's unified transportation plan. Occasionally, we have changes to the RTP that are needed to account for changing conditions and new opportunities, and I'm going to wager a guess this isn't the last time this is going to happen. We are going to turn some time over to Jory. Jory Johnner with WFRC is going to introduce the amendment to the RTP, and then we will consider a motion afterward. So, Jory?
Yes. Can everybody hear me? Can you hear me? Good. All right. Oh, thank you, and I hope you and your families are doing well and safe and getting out of the house a little bit. There's a ton of people I see out and about nowadays, so it's been really, really good. Today, I'd like to briefly review the recently approved RTP amendment process with you, along with two staff level projects and seven proposed board level amendments to the 2019 to 2050 Regional Transportation Plan. I will ask if there are any questions from the Regional Growth Committee, ask the RGC to open it up for public comment and for a motion from the RGC to approve these draft amendments. You have the information on the projects in your packets if you've dialed into this meeting and not able to see the presentation. As you may know, WFRC, in consultation with local communities, transportation partners, stakeholders, and the public along the Wasatch Front, update the Regional Transportation Plan every 4 years. The last plan was approved in May of 2019, almost exactly a year ago, right? And as a reminder, this plan is multimodal, including active transportation, transit, and roadway projects and the connections to the land use and regional centers from Box Elder County down to the southern part of Salt Lake County. Periodically, adjustments are needed during the planning process due to funding availability, local or state needs, changes to land use, et cetera. The amendment process has been modified to be more streamlined, but also maintain the rigor of the planning process, including review of financial constraints, public input, and air quality conformity if needed. Next slide. It should be noted that there are three different categories of amendments based on their level of significance, and each level has a slightly different process. Level one's process, a staff modification, includes coordinating with the chair and vice chair of the Regional Growth Committee. With final approval from WFRC's executive director. This process also requires informing the RGC tax and RGC, which I'll do today for two of the projects. Level two's process, a board modification, is review of technical considerations with the planning process and review of recommendations by the RGC TAC and approved by RGC. Level three is a full amendment for regionally significant projects requiring technical considerations, air quality conformity, and a 30-day public comment period with final approval by the Regional Council. Next slide. Level one amendments include smaller type projects under about $10 million for roads and $5 million for transit, corridor preservation projects, and individual active transportation type projects. Level three amendments include all regionally significant roads and fixed guideway transit. And you notice I jumped over two. Level two amendments include all the other projects in between those two categories, including regional land use center changes and full active transportation master plan updates. Next slide. The following two projects have been reviewed by the WFRC staff and the chair and vice chair of Regional Growth Committee and are for your information only. Next slide, 4000 North in Far West and in Plain City is an operational project extending from 3900 West to State Route 126. This project will be added into the first phase of the plan, which is the first 10 years from 2019 to 2030. With funding for the projects coming from the Weber County Council of Governments quarter cents. 4000 North in Far, or sorry, 900 East in Mill Creek is an operational project being added from 3900 South to 4500 South. The project will be added in phase one with funding coming from WFRC Surface Transportation Program funds and possibly county corridor preservation funds. The next seven projects need your review and recommendation as they fall into the level two category for board modifications. The first project is in Farmington. Commerce Drive is a new construction project from Shepherd Lane to Park Lane just west of I-15 and complements the Station Park Urban Center. This project is recommended to be in phase one with potential funding sources coming from RDA, TRZ, impact fees, different appropriations, or application for the WFRC Surface Transportation Program funding. Next project is actually our first land use center modification to the 2050 vision. It's the West Davis Business Center. It's a new center near the West Davis corridor in 2700 West in Layton. This center will increase employment locations within Davis County, increase access to opportunity, and reduce commuter times. It'll line up with the Layton Forward Master Plan with the Wasatch Choice and with the Wasatch Choice Regional Vision. This is expected that the center start development in the first 10 years of the plan. 7300 West in Salt Lake is the new construction project from State Route 111 to 126 South, submitted by Salt Lake County. This project was in the 2015 to 2040 regional transportation plan and had been anticipated to be completed before the 2019 to 2050 regional transportation plan was adopted. This would add the project back into the RTP. Funding sources include corridor preservation funds, surface transportation program funds, and other local community funds. The next project is proposed to be amended to refine the Bangor Highway collector distributed system to a one-way frontage road system and shift the project slightly to the north from California Avenue to 3500 South. No changes in cost or modifications were needed for this project. It was more of a clarification and a slight adjustment north. The next three projects fall within West Jordan City and are new construction projects that extend from 5600 West to State Route 111 across the Mountain View Corridor on 7000 South, 7400 South, and 8600 South. These projects were identified in the West Jordan City Master Plan update, coordinated with UDOT, and will provide local street connectivity, east-west access, and active transportation connectivity. The request is to include these projects in the first phase of the RTP. Level 2 projects require 5 technical considerations to be evaluated for each project. Next slide. As you can see on this slide, the safety index, vehicle hours of travel, connectivity, project readiness, and support of the Wasatch Choice Regional Vision are reviewed. I'm not planning on going through every one of these in detail, but they were included in your packet, and if you have questions, I can address those. So, Mayor Ramsey, that concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Open the amendments up to the public comment, and then would entertain a motion to approve the level 2 board modifications.
Fantastic, Jory, thank you. Before we open public comment, I'd like to open the floor if anybody has any questions for Jory on any of these projects or how this process works.
Yeah, this is Reed. Kind of perennial concerns. Jory, to what degree are we following our timetable for amendments? We used to have amendments at every single Regional Growth Committee meeting. I thought you consolidated the amendment process, so it wasn't a constant thing, but a periodic thing. Are we following the new timetable?
So one of the our old process that we had that was last updated in 2016 really shot for amendments once a year, with, you know, because most of the level 2 and level 3 modifications took 4 or 5 months to get through the entire process, review with the County Council of Governments, go out to a 30-day public comment period. This new process, Reed, streamlines it a little bit more, allows for a coordination with the RGC chair, vice chair for level 1. Level 2 allows for RGC to approve, and which is why I'm asking for public comment here, so we don't have to go out to a full 30-day public comment. It will, this new process for level 2 board modifications could allow for modifications throughout the year a little more easily, but we're staying with the timeline. This is our first one in the first year of the planning process, and so we haven't ran into multiple amendments or amendments each RGC. I don't have any on the docket right now for the August meeting or anything like that. So we'll just kind of have to see, how projects change or needs change and the requests from either our transportation partners or local governments.
Okay, I've got, thank you. I've got some other questions. You've got negative VHT for some projects and positive VHT for others. Would you comment on that? What's going on here? When you would I would think that some of these projects, if they're capacity projects, might reduce VHT in the short run, but not the long run. That's the problem with capacity projects.
We've looked at this one. It's a little trickier because it's hard to get a no build for a new road, right? So like you can see on the far right, 7,074, those are new roads. They should have in a no build zero VHT. But what we do is we've tried to capture an area around them to, really look at not only the impact of the roadway itself, but the surrounding roadways. And so we've taken a buffer around each one of these roadways, and Susie Swim in our office has ran the model with that buffer, and we feel like this is best representative of kind of the impact of not only it, but the surrounding roads around the project itself. And these are fairly small VHTs. We look out to 2050 when we have, millions of VHT across the region. These are fairly small impacts, and we didn't feel as staff that they were significant changes or impacts to the plan or to the whole process.
Well, I'm not sure that that's a good thing. I mean, a multi-million dollar project should probably have a big impact. Third thing, to what degree do these projects, and I don't see it in this table, complement or further Wasatch Choice for 2050 vision, which is focused on centers. So any project that serves a center directly would be my kind of project. Do these projects collectively or individually serve centers, and which ones don't?
You can see at the bottom there, Reed. One clarification maybe, these are all reviewed against, there are 10 Wasatch Choice Regional Vision Goals. These were the five that were selected by the Regional Growth Committee through our process in 2017 to review level 2 board modifications. If we had a level three full amendment, there are additional goals that they're reviewed against. But read at the bottom there, support Wasatch Choice Regional Vision.
Yeah, I see that.
You can see the first three projects tied directly to centers within the Wasatch Choice Vision. The last three there in West Jordan are, they don't necessarily tie directly to a vision or the center, but they provide a lot of other benefits with local connectivity, across Mountain View Corridor, not through an interchange, connections to regional parks, active transportation connections. And so we try to balance all of these goals against each other. And sometimes, they'll score a positive on all of them, and sometimes they won't, right? And so I don't see that being a negative that these projects don't tie directly to a center. They might actually make it better for a center that's just outside of their capture zone. It could be over on Bangor Highway or something like that, a mile away or something.
Okay, last thing, and thank you for that explanation. I saw the final row, but wasn't, when it says no identified centers, my reaction was, is that consistent with the vision, which I think should put the vast majority of the money into serving centers. Last question, was there a West Davis Highway project that you reviewed?
No. So the West Davis Corridor is currently funded. It's slated to be started construction here shortly. The one project that I did review was a new center that's right near West Davis Corridor in 2700 West in Layton City. They identified it in their master plan update. And so should be noted that in the past, we didn't have a process, and this is something we updated in the most recent amendment process to amend the centers into the Wasatch Choice Regional Vision. And so this is our first center that we've ever amended into the vision. In the past, we would just update centers in the four-year planning cycle. And so I'm excited that this center was able to be hopefully added into the regional vision and be more consistent with Layton City's general plan.
Is it a center in the same sense? I've been concerned about the West Davis Highway freeway for a long time, as have a lot of others, that it would induce sprawl on the west side of Davis County. And that's why there was opposition and an alternative was put forward. Is this, although it wasn't, the alternative wasn't adopted, is this center a center in the same sense as others? Is it mixed use? Is it fairly dense? Is it walkable? You know, those sorts of things. And what are you providing? Are you providing the local infrastructure for the center? Or what does that line item relate to exactly?
Hey, Katie, can you go up a handful of slides to the center there? It's in.
They passed it. You passed it, I think. Go back
one. Down. There we go.
There it is.
Yeah, so Reed, this project actually, it's right next to the West Davis corridor, and it's a business center, and so there could be a little bit of mixed use, but it ties directly into a couple other projects in our regional transportation plan, not only the West Davis corridor, but it's right near where Layton Parkway comes in from the east and ties in the West Davis corridor, and then 2700 West ties in from the north. And I believe Mayor Petro from Layton City is on the call also. And so if she has anything to add on this project, I'd welcome that. But, you know, we did talk with Layton City on this, and I believe that this project, the center matches of similar centers across the region that we had included into the plan during the Wasatch Choice 2050, you know, vision creation.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, this is Mayor Petro. And in addition to what you've said and to maybe help you with the concern about the sprawl, the west side of that corridor is all mitigation grounds. So there would not be any sprawl going towards the west, towards the lake. Everything would be on the east side of the West Davis corridor, and then as far as 2700, the off ramp there, this would be east of that off ramp as well. So, and exactly what you said, it is a business park that we're aiming for, as well as maybe some small retail.
Thank you, Mayor Petro. We appreciate that, and thank you, Reed and Jory, for the questions and the explanation. Appreciate that. I am now going to open the public comment related specifically to the RTP amendment. Is there any member of the public here that would like to speak to this or ask questions or address any of what's being considered here?
Mayor, this is Andrew. I don't know if I count as a member of the public for these purposes or not, but I would just like to offer one brief comment. And that is, as these projects have been brought forward to Wasatch Front Regional Council for consideration and consideration by this committee, there are requests from the local governments or transportation agencies. And we as staff have coordinated with those governments and entities. So for example, a UDOT project or a Salt Lake County project, we have worked directly with the local communities and transportation agencies in evaluating them and then bringing them forward for your consideration.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate that. I'm looking back and forth between the the pages who's on here, and I'm not getting anyone wishing to speak. Okay. With that, we will close the public comment and open it up to a motion. Is there a motion to amend the regional transportation plan? This is Amendment 1 to the regional transportation plan as has been presented.
So moved.
Thank you. We have a motion by Jeff Scott. Is there a second? Somebody, I think, said second, but I don't.
It's me, Carlton Christensen. Second by
Carlton Christensen. Thank you. Any additional discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor of Amendment 1, approving the Amendment 1 to the Regional Transportation Plan as has been presented, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
That amendment is approved. Thank you. Okay, item 5 on our agenda. Jory, thank you for your work on that. Item 5, we're going to talk about some of the impacts of COVID-19 on transportation in our communities. And we know this coronavirus is affecting everything, including the way we live, work, play, learn, travel. We're going to have a discussion and a bit of a presentation here on data regarding the short-term changes that are taking place, and then we're going to talk about some potential long-term shifts and high level exploration of some policy considerations that we may end up taking into account as things continue to emerge and as we recover from this pandemic. So first off, we have the short-term data on the impacts of the stay-at-home phase that we've been doing for the last couple of months. And so we're going to turn some time over to Ted Knowlton. We appreciate Ted being here with us and ask him to introduce this conversation. Ted, let me turn this to you.
Mayor, thanks so much. And I assume that everybody can see and hear me and see my slides as well. Now, we are all living through, obviously, perhaps the most significant rapid changes that we've experienced in terms of transportation behavior. And it may have some impacts long-term on enduring on transportation behavior and land development. Let's start by taking a look at the data. And I'll just note that there's a document related to this, and the link is at the bottom of this screen. We'll send it out with this material. So this is the peak of the change. This is not today. This is during the last couple of months. How did it peak out at? So let's start with e-commerce and telecommuting, purchasing things online and commuting into work virtually, as we are all doing now. In some industries, it's much, much higher, but in the aggregate, it has peaked out at about 40%. That is very significant. This is before COVID-19 core onset and then during. So a before and after, a quick shift, unlike perhaps anything we've ever seen. This has had some other negative impacts, like a well-documented drop in a transit ridership as well. An estimate of bicycle usage is significantly higher, approximately 100% increase in Utah in bicycle usage. One little note about that is part recreational, but also part purposeful transportation, getting people to and from the destinations that they need to get to. Open space usage, that sounds like a nice round number, 100%. That is very close to the observed increase in trips to parks and open space. So don't think that we just broadly fudge. It's actually very close to 100% increase in open space use. What does this add up to? If you look at traffic across all of the roadways, it has not dropped at the level of 40%. But when you think about the trip to and from work related to telecommuting, telework, this has translated into a significant drop in flows on freeways at the peak, about a 40% drop. This adds up to approximately a 15% drop in travel time by automobile. Now, this has been during the spring. The spring is a time where our air is pretty clean. So what we did is we approximated what are the impacts on air emissions, and that this adds up to about 38-40% drop in air emissions. So this is kind of a look at what we have been experiencing. We've had a sense of this. These are real numbers, with the one exception of the bicycle use, which is more of an estimate. So this is getting our conversation started here today. Before we get into a look and a conversation about what might endure after COVID-19 concludes, perhaps Mayor Ramsey, we just start with the question of, are there any surprises that you are noting from this information? And second, are there pieces of information that you would like WFRC and partners to go out and try to gather that supplements what you're looking at here today?
Hey, Ted. Hey, Ted,
can I make a comment real quick? This is Bob Dandroy out of Roy City.
Yes, go ahead, Mayor.
Ted, I'm hearing that businesses may be rethinking about this teleconferencing their meetings, and may very well have more people typically working in office environment to stay home, and possibly could reduce their office footprint where they collaborate or they have a group of people working together. It's an interesting conversation I'm hearing taking place, but there's no facts behind it. My comment really was this: if we do see where there is some benefit from this teleconferencing thing that's unfolding around us, and I've heard numbers anywhere from 10-15% improvement in productivity, then the question I would ask is, what's the direct relationship that's going to have on our transportation needs? Because we have, I think, about 60,000-80,000 people a day transiting out of Weaver and Davis County and into Salt Lake. And also our transiting in terms of our train, our front runner station. But more importantly, the impacts it may have in terms of the needs for office space environment to support this, if in fact many of these people can work from home.
And Mayor, let me just note that that's exactly the next part of this conversation is, on the one hand, these are things that we're experiencing now, but perhaps a more important question is, what happens after a vaccine in the next few years as we return to some type of equilibrium? And that's really a key question, and how do we shape those things collectively? And I can move to that when you as a group are ready.
Hey, Ted. Carlton, one thing that I've noticed, and you can always tell your coworkers who have bad broadband because they're usually dialed in with their phone, and you know they probably have kids that are trying to do online stuff. But I think if anything, this last few months has pointed out is sort of the weak broadband systems in a lot of the communities, and you build the system so it does probably 75 or 80% of what you need at max time or something, just because you don't want to unduly do it. But it will affect a lot about sort of how they go forward and you know how practical this might be in a long-term scenario. And I don't know if we have a way to measure that, and I don't know if private providers would even give us that kind of data. It would be really interesting to understand it a little better.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I mentioned at the beginning that I got a little message that flashed on my screen that said, your internet connectivity is questionable or something, whatever, and I'd never seen that. And I, just along those lines personally, I hope we don't have an issue with it because my son's taking the AP test this morning while I'm doing meetings, so, and my husband's on meetings. So I hope we don't have connectivity issues, but Carlton, that was a good point. It's good. Is there anyone else that has anything specific for Ted about surprises or Are you ready to move on?
I just had one question, maybe. As you're looking at what other data you could mine during this pandemic, is what are we learning from some of these spikes, particularly in bicycle use and open space use? Are there areas that are seeing more use? Because that really is the best indicator of where people want to recreate. It's where they want to use their bicycles. Now, granted, if their patterns are different because they're not taking their bike to the train station, as an example, it might not be exactly what we're going to have as far as a long-term need, but it is going to show some interesting patterns if we can find a way to track that.
Let me just know, Evan, that is a terrific question. And as we analyze the data that comes out, I think patterns of geography and where we're seeing what is a key question here. And there's a lag between gathering data and our ability to report it. So we'll understand a lot more about this in the coming couple of months.
Mayor Ramsey?
Yes.
I know a lot of people have been coming north, out at the Spiral Jetty, Devil's Playground, Golden Spike National Historic Park. We've had vehicle travels more than what we see even during the summer sometimes. We've had as many as 50 to 60 vehicles per hour going out to the Spiral Jetty, which is pretty remote. I was speaking with Commissioner Cox from Rich County, and he said a couple of weeks ago, the municipal solid waste pickup in the Garden City area around Bear Lake is what they normally see during a July weekend. So a lot of people have left maybe the Wasatch Front or the metropolitan areas and have went out to second homes or in trailers or RVs and are recreating during the pandemic. So.
Good point as well.
Hey, this is Commissioner Thomas Fountain-Twilla. I just want to tag in with what Jeff's comments out here over during this pandemic and every weekend, travel through Twilla County, going through the dunes, going out on I-80 out to the Knowles Recreation Area, 5 Mile Pass, unbelievable amount of traffic that comes through. And it's such a huge impact, and that doesn't count the side canyons in the recreation area for bicycles. And so it's a big impact, Jeff, and we feel your pain there.
This is Tina Cannon at one of the other shelter counties. We experienced the same thing. We weren't actually going to shut down our county offices until the Wasatch Front offices, the government offices, shut down. And then we ended up shutting down our DMV because we got the overflow. So it's impacted us. It's when the Wasatch Front shuts down, people head for the hills, literally. And then we started feeling the impacts and having to shut things down as that happened.
So Mayor Ramsey, this next slide is educated guesswork, a postulate, putting forward to get the dialogue going. The idea here is that, you know, we're in the middle of a really sensitive and difficult time as communities. As we think about planning, one of the questions is, how will the landscape of the future change as a result of the things that people are trying today? People are doing what we're doing now. They're getting used to telecommuting. They're getting used to different ways of getting around. They're getting, that may add up to long-term changes when there is some type of new equilibrium. And so it's a little bit sensitive to say, hey, let's look past the COVID-19, but that's kind of the space that we're all in together of always needing to say, well, where are we headed as communities and as regional infrastructure partners? And so I hope you'll allow me putting out some postulates, recognizing that we don't really know. There's a range that I'm going to talk about, a low and a high with regard to each of these. Let's start with e-commerce and telecommuting. Perhaps that's going to drop some. People will return back to physical locations of separation of work and home. But there's a chance that we could lock in perhaps even up to half of what we're experiencing now. There's a lot of questions about that. Likewise, on telecommuting, both on telecommuting and e-commerce. Now, I'll just note that this also relates to land development questions. If we see less need for office space by corporations, by businesses, does that mean that they start looking for less office space and that over time that means that our cities have less office demand, office space demands? We've already been experiencing shifts of brick and mortar retail more towards warehousing as people buy more things online. We will likely see that accelerate as well. These things have land use implications. Public transportation, a lot of the shift relates to a desire to have social distancing. Some of that social distancing concern may endure over a number of years, and that is a challenge, a risk for UTA. There's also an opportunity something like what we're experiencing to pause and ask the questions, are there some significant modifications that can be made to operations, to future plans? And so there's always an opportunity to perhaps do a significant pivot in the way things function. And that's reflected in an equilibrium high point of a positive number on public transportation. A lot of uncertainty in that space.
I will say we're currently out with a survey doing both current riding passengers and then a lot of our corporate pass holders to ask some of those questions. And it will guide us a lot in how we restore and how we might look at, you know, new service going forward, just so you know.
Thanks, Trustee Christensen. Open space and bicycle usage. Now, these are different in the sense that bicycle use is a hybrid of both recreational trips and purposeful transportation, but they have some similarity. That in the aggregate, I think we are seeing a significant appetite for amenities in our communities. It could be the case that communities that want to help lock in the higher levels of bicycle use will need to explore the type of infrastructure that exists. There's a big range here, but we may see an enduring demand for open space and amenities. Freeway volumes, there's a lot of uncertainty here. The reason why the equilibrium high is at zero is sometimes when commutes become easier for people, some subset of the population adjusts their behavior and decides, well, I can range further or I can travel more at rush hour than I might have been doing in the past. So sometimes opening up opportunities for easier commuting, it sort of gets taken advantage of by some subset of the population. And so there's a chance for us to hang on to some reduced vehicle volumes and reduced travel time by auto, but there's a chance that we lose all of those gains. It depends a lot on what we do and how we move forward. And that could then add up to being able to lock in some benefits in terms of air emissions over the long term, or perhaps just modest gains in that. So I'm going to pause, hand the baton back to our chair. And just a basic question here is, what do you think about these postulates? How would you refine these? And what does your crystal ball say?
Well, I think we're all working through a crystal ball right now, right? All of the, we don't have a lot of data yet, and a lot of everything we're doing is speculation, but based on our best guess and past models, Anybody have anything in response to Ted's question that you'd like to share?
Yeah, this is Reed. We're so early in this process now, you know, 2 or 3 months into it. Is there a need to nail these down at this point when we're going to know so much more in 6 months? I think this is an interesting exercise, but I'm not sure it would, for example, affect the 2050 long-range plan. Eventually it will, if these numbers in the last two columns prove to be correct. I would expect an impact then on the plan. I would hope so, because there should be one. But we'll know so much more in several months than we do right now. So but my thought is that maybe we don't have to refine these. These are interesting, and it's good that you're thinking in these terms.
Thank you. I think that really was the point of this part of the discussion, is to have some initial look at what things we're going to need to be mindful of as we see how things play out. It's a good point, Reed, and I think that is what this is. We don't have enough data yet. We need more time to know how things continue to go, but speculating on what we could be looking at, knowing we're going to be facing some changes, I think was the goal. Ted, did you have anything you wanted to say in response to that?
That's right. That, you know, we don't know. The interesting thing is we're not going to know until that equilibrium actually returns. But the opportunity, and part of the reason of taking the look at this now, is that while people are adjusting and making shifts, that's a time to enable people to adapt in positive ways. So there may be ways that communities, corporations can encourage higher levels of telecommuting, let's say, as an example. Here's another example. We're seeing high levels of bicycle usage, in part because traffic volumes are low and because some communities like Salt Lake City are opening up streets for dedicated bike usage. We have the ability, perhaps, to enable that new population of bicycle riders to develop a habits that can endure. On the other side, if we say, well, it was just a temporary thing and we're not going to try to have those kinds of physical opportunities in our communities, then we might see the equilibrium on the low side. So we can shape this range, but the time to shape this range is as this is being experienced in our communities. And that's part of the reason of looking at it now.
Thank you. Anybody else have anything they wanted to add to this?
Yeah,
Mayor Ramsey, sorry. This is Steve Shields, councilman from Harriman City. I think Ted brought this up in his comments, and I would maybe bring this up for further discussion. This idea of land use changing towards perhaps warehouses as people have moved towards more e-commerce online shopping. In a discussion with our finance manager, there was a discussion about the impact of sales tax revenue going forward. If so much of it is being generated online, or a greater portion is being generated online, could that change our total views about land use in terms of commercial and retail space going forward, and our consumer preferences and how we buy and what we buy going to change the shape of what our cities look like in the future? I don't know that I have a real good answer for that, but that's definitely something that this group would be great at doing some research and making an attempt to answer that question.
This is Mayor Bigelow. You know, it's interesting to watch what people actually do.
I don't know if surveys will give you all the information you need. For example, what has happened with the pandemic has confirmed for millennials the lifestyle that they seek. It's confirmed that you can telecommute. It's confirmed that they need more open space. It's kind of verified for them. You take the over 60 and see what the pandemic did to them, and they stayed home. They really didn't change anything. They're not going to change their shopping habits a lot. But I think what the pandemic did was to confirm this direction. And when you look at 2050, there's no question that there will be significant changes, because the pandemic is really kind of a verification process of some of the issues that have been percolating out there. More people shopping online, more telecommuting, more bicycle use. It just confirmed it for many of those people. And so when we'll say to them, we're not going to change, we're going to do the way things the way we always have, they'll just look at it and say, yeah, you live in the last century. You don't even know what's going on. So most of us who are in that over 60 generation will look at this and say, we don't need to change. We just need to go back to normal. Normal will never be here again. Things have changed. And if we watch what people actually do, that is much better than a survey, because a survey asks their opinions. Whereas when you watch what they actually do, that's fact and reality. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Bigelow. And I think Mayor Arvey, you...
Yeah, I did. So as I look at this, I think there's a couple of things that we need to think about. We have the inland port coming in and some other things that will affect how we do things. As I look at this, there are multiple economies out there, and we're looking at the knowledge economy that many people are familiar with and looking at. There's a whole range of people that really don't participate in this. I mean, what we're seeing right now is really affecting the lower income population in our state much higher than it is anybody else. And as we go through this, one of the things we need to think about is how those lower income people are going to be affected, where they're going to work, and how they're going to be supported. It's just something that I think needs to be thought about, because not everybody is in the knowledge economy right now.
Mayor Ramsey?
Yes, go ahead, Mayor Mendenhall.
I think Mayor Bigelow hit it spot on, and we're going to continue to, we should be watching what plays out. Obviously, we're watching on our commercial and retail side of square footage in the city, and we're, I'm hoping actually on two fronts. One, what Mayor Bigelow was talking about, that as local leaders, that we will look at the political landscape potentially shifting toward more support, I hope, for things like open space initiatives, which at WFRC, we've talked on all the committees for a long time about how basically those three tenets of what WFRC efforts are arranged to do, the one that isn't funded and supported most of the time by the state or others is the open space preservation. And we know the need is there. We know that our population is growing dramatically, and we know what the open space ratios are today are not going to sustain our future population. So with that, I hope that we're all really tuning in to how that willingness on the part of our residents to support the acquisition or the creation of parks, trails, and connectivity to open space increases. Secondly, I think I'm excited to hear in the Utah Leads Together 3.0 plan, and to begin working through the potential with you all in the state on shovel-ready transportation projects that include active transportation projects in this regard. So I think that both the willingness on the part of many of our residents and the financial opportunity, obviously we have to pay back the bonds if the state might be willing to issue them. And that's a very serious conversation for each of us as we look at the downturn that we're in right now. But there could be some very great opportunities of the willingness and the finances coming together.
Thank you for that. Appreciate that. Okay, Ted, I'm going to have you move on to our next slide and our next point of discussion. Go ahead and take it away. Is there anything else that goes with this presentation? I thought there was one more slide, but maybe I'm mistaken.
There is, pardon me. Okay. I assume everybody can hear me. And this is where the conversation is already heading with the committee. And these are a few things to put out there for conversation. We don't know exactly how to adapt or encourage all of these changes, but this is partly echoing some things from Mayor Arby and Mayor Mendenhall as well. But if you think about some of these shifts, let's take e-commerce and telecommuting. If we assume that there is some land use implications of that, then we can ask ourselves questions like, how well does our zoning work? How well do areas that are zoned predominantly for retail, how do they adapt? And part of the challenge that we have as communities is we can't predict exactly where the land use market is going to go. Now, so if you can't predict exactly where the land use market is going to go, one position is to not try. Okay, one position is to say, let's broaden the range of land uses that can occur in different parts of our city and enable broader land use flexibility. Shift from a focus on the use of buildings and shift more towards the form of buildings. That is a basic strategy. There's a second related strategy. If you think about how buildings shift in their use over time, most of our communities are already built. One of the challenges that developers and lenders face when they let's say they want to take a retail building and they want to shift it to warehousing or residential or some new hybrid of a distribution center. One of the questions that's always a challenge is, well, how do we park it? And it's always a small tragedy when I see communities say no to economic development because a parking shift can't be negotiated. And so this is a time when communities might want to take a look at modernizing parking regulation. What does that mean? That means things like right-sizing parking to the new realities. Note, if a lot of people are telecommuting, that means that parking demands are shifting. If a lot of people are using e-commerce, that means parking demands are shifting. This is fueled by the rise of Uber and Lyft as well. So there's kind of this time and need to modernize parking generally. That's also about allowing the private sector to innovate. How do they provide, how do they encourage telecommuting? Do you reward that with the way you handle parking? Things like that. It also, this parking modernization also gets at how do you maximize the use of public parking as well. So that's a secondary component. These kind of all go together, land use flexibility, parking modernization. Bicycle use. And this is, I think, pretty obvious that a key aspect of locking in higher levels of bicycle use, Mayor Mendenhall already mentioned this, is the form of our infrastructure as well. I would just add one thing to note about that, is that part of what we are seeing is a lot of bicycle usage in and around people's homes. How do we help people connect from their homes to the daily destinations that they want to get to, the grocery store or what have you? What are those patterns? open space usage as well has been commented on. This is not just about getting to the mountains. It is about access to parks and open space where people are using them throughout their day as well. And we will seek to understand that as Evan Curtis suggested, of trying to understand the geography and where the demands are. But it does really beg the question for communities, what is your open space plan? How does it meet people's needs? Does that really need to be looked at differently? And I would add, are there interim steps before there's the physical allocation of perhaps additional open space to allow broader use of amenities that can be done on a temporary basis so that we're meeting those needs and helping people adapt and find that positive new equilibrium. So again, on this, Mayor Ramsey, I'll hand it back to you. These are general strategies that relate to a shift in equilibrium and also based on this notion that we can't really predict exactly. And so in the face of not being able to predict exactly, flexibility and nimbleness are good approaches.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. Okay. This is a conversation that I think we will have ongoing, long-term. I mean, I think this is our initial stab at what are we even looking at? And it's the kind of conversation that as communities, we're asking ourselves in all sorts of ways, you know, how does everything look? So I really do appreciate that. And Andrew, I'm going to ask you if you have some input that you would be willing to share on comparatively, what were some of the challenges we faced before? And anyway, what do you think things look like going forward? If you'd just take a quick minute and give us your thoughts on that, we would love to hear it.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mayor Ramsey. I think that this conversation points out that as you all are very appropriately focused on the urgent needs of the moment, public health, restarting your economies in a safe way, et cetera, you as local elected officials and city staff and county staff, et cetera, have really a really important role in decisions to make in how you design your communities, your zoning, your general plans, your policies, your investment strategies as you go forward that are relevant to what some are calling returning better as we emerge and we recover from this. But it's so interesting to note as we're all so focused on the moment now that just think back like just 60 days. Remember when we were all talking about growth and like how that was the big issue that we were all focused on? Traffic congestion, housing affordability, air quality concerns. The reality is that those issues have not gone away. They're just not top of mind for us right now. And the Kempsey Gardner Policy Institute and Pam Perlick and others there are speculating that our growth projections will continue essentially unabated. There may be some dips and everything, but in fact, there is some possibility that our growth rate will even be more accelerated than what we had anticipated before, because more people may want to move to Utah because of the relative safety and security and economic vitality that we have in our state right now. And so for a moment, I'll ask you to sort of hearken back 60 days to thinking about how we deal with those growth issues. And I'm going to share my screen with you for a moment here with the reminder of something that this group has been very focused on, and that is the Wasatch Choice vision. Looking out for our region out to 2050. You remember the development of this vision that focuses on several key strategies: providing transportation choices, supporting housing options, preserving open space, and then linking economic development with transportation and housing decisions. And I believe that these basic strategies and the vision that we have all laid out still hold now just as much as ever. And some of the conversation that we've had today points to an acceleration of the need to implement the strategies that we had talked about. Open space, the need to have green space and trails woven right into the fabric of our community so that people can access them right from their homes. We have known this and we have more need for it now than we have before. As Mayor Mendenhall noted, the release of the Utah Leads Together 3.0 points to economic recovery with investment in transportation, investment in broadband, providing housing options, looking at air quality. So I think the point here is that one of the ways that we can most successfully over the medium and long term recover from our current situation is to make sure that we move forward with the strategies that we had all collectively been working towards through the Wasatch Choice 2050 vision for the future. Now, the context for that, let me stop sharing here, the context for how that gets done at the local level for the broad regional vision and then the policy shifts that we've been talking about is most generally in your general plans and your zoning. And so as a Mayor Ramsey, as a brief reminder on that also, I'm gonna ask Lanice Davenport to give our group here a reminder of what is the law that is now in place that says what you have to do as local governments. And as Lanice ticks through this briefly, I would ask you to think about, do these things fit with the policy shifts and strategies that we were just talking about for dealing with economic recovery? And I'll submit to you that you have an opportunity to do what we are required to do by law to deal with growth issues and do it in a way that is really responsive to the best approaches for economic recovery. Lanice?
Thank you. Thumbs up if you can hear me.
We're good.
Thank you. Thank you. So great work has already been done in creating, rewriting, updating moderate income housing plans over the last year, which is where really our attention has been over the last year, which has been focused on moderate income housing planning requirements as a result of SB 34. And many thanks need to go out to you, the cities and counties, along with the League and UAC and APA for all the great work that's already been done. But there's a lot of other stuff in SB 34 that affects general plans, which has received less attention, but of course is still important. And that gets at the Wasatch Choice regional vision. So for example, the general plan's land use element must consider the housing element. So basically local governments now need to implement the goals of their moderate income housing plan and consider where to locate housing for all residents, no matter the income, from extremely low income to extremely high income households. Also, the general plan's traffic and transportation element must now include active transportation projects like walking and biking trails. And for those communities with tracks or front runner or bus rapid transit lines, they must take advantage of these transit corridors by planning housing and jobs and recreation around them. The traffic and transportation element must also correlate with the land use element and correlate with population and employment projections. Finally, the transportation and traffic element must consider the regional transportation plan, which of course we love, developed by their respective MPO and developed by UDOT. So the last element I'm going to briefly talk about is this optional parks and open space element of a general plan. Communities may consider an environmental element for their natural resources like parks and open space. And as been discussed throughout this entire meeting, we are learning more and more how desirable these places are for our residents. People want access to parks and trails and active transportation facilities. So just to summarize, there's a lot more work to do as a result of Senate Bill 34, and we have not forgotten, rather, not a shocker, we are planning accordingly. So once we can all think about something other than coronavirus, we are ready to move forward. Thank you, Andrew, and thank you, Madam Chair. That concludes my piece.
Thanks, Lanice. And Mayor Ramsey, if I may, I'll just offer a sort of a brief look ahead on some of the work that we anticipate is happening. And Ted, you can drop that down the screen share now. Thank you. What we are working towards is when you are ready, and when I say you, I mean the elected officials, the city and county staff and agency staff, when you feel you are ready to, and many of you are doing this already, but to sort of shift your attention to how do we do our local planning, our general plans, and our zoning We want to have the tools and resources available to you so that you can make those required updates by SB 34, but do it in a way that is most effective and responsive to this coronavirus and having economic recovery. And so what we have been doing with all of our partner agencies, all the partners to the Wasatch Choice Vision, so the League of Cities and Towns and Association of Counties, UDOT and UTA, Envision Utah, the universities, and many of our other partners, is we've established several topic-specific working groups to have resources available to you, and those fall into four categories. And as I go through these, I'll note, if any of you as RGC members want to participate, you are more than welcome. So there's a working group on technical assistance, things like the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program, jointly funded by WFRC, Salt Lake County, UDOT, and UTA to provide resources as you think about how can we redo our development patterns or our zoning or our general plans. Public engagement. How do we do public engagement in growth issues is always challenging, but how do we do it now in an era of social distancing? Another work group on that. Number three is on communications. The messaging challenges and the controversies around growth issues, we aren't focused on it now, but remember how controversial those issues are? How do we talk about those issues, particularly as we emerge from coronavirus? So there's a third work group on that. And then the last one is on analysis of decisions that we make, you make locally, and that we make at the regional level, and what are the different paths forward in different strategies and how to analyze the impacts of those on traffic and economic development and air quality, et cetera. The purpose of this is, I should say, this is not a WFRC thing. This is a Wasatch Choice Vision partnership. So all of us working together to make sure that we have the best data and information available so that we can, so that you at the local level can make the best decisions so that your communities can thrive. This is completely consistent, I'll say, with the Utah Leads Together 3.0 and looking ahead to 4.0 strategies on transportation investment, housing, air quality, outdoor recreation, so that we can return as effectively as possible. Our hope is that come fall, we will be in a better position to be working together physically, such that we can be having workshops and meetings, Wasatch Choice Partnership working groups, a joint fall conference between the League of Cities and Towns, Wasatch Choice, and the American Planning Association chapter for Utah, all working together to help all of our local communities, all of you, to be able to have the tools you need to implement these strategies and policies at the local level so that we can all be effective. So Merritt Ramsey, that's a little bit of a combo of how does what's happening now fit with what we were thinking about already for dealing with growth and how they fit together, and then some approaches for heading into the future.
Much. Andrew, we appreciate that. And Lanise, as always, thank you. Really appreciate having you here and your expertise and always watching out for how we can comply with SB 34 and what our options really are, since one size doesn't fit all, and how best to use that as we look at going forward into the unknown, really.
Thank you, Mayor.
Did somebody have something to say? Okay. Ted has a few general strategies to share with us now to maybe plant some seeds as we start thinking about long-term and look at how things turn out and consider some long-term shifts that we may potentially see. So Ted, we're gonna turn this over to you and have you just kind of talk about a little bit about a few more things that we might can consider. I mean, you touched on parking and the need for the amount of parking, but I think you have a couple more things you wanted to share about things that, again, this is very high level. This is super early on. We're 2 months into this, and we really don't know exactly what the future is going to look like. But as we do start thinking, seeds that I like to call them seeds that he can plant can kind of help shape the direction we at least consider. So, Ted, take it away.
Thanks, Mayor. And those points that I threw out there for conversation are all that I'm suggesting today to just think about, again, flexibility in land use, given that it's hard to predict where land use markets will head, that has to be coupled with re-looking at parking regulation, those two things go hand in hand together, and that there's a lot of shifts in parking demand. And so it's a great time to reassess parking regulation, and that the sheer demands for amenities, both in terms of open space and in terms of bicycle infrastructure, that there is sort of an opportunity to meet those demands while they're being formulated. If we wait a few years before we provide the infrastructure that helps people lock in those kinds of behaviors, let's say commuting by bike or enjoying the streets and parks in communities, if we wait, those habits may slide back to what they might have been in the past. So I'm just recapping what I had gone through. And those are very general strategies intended to get the conversation going. And I'll just leave it at that, Mayor.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. We all appreciate it. As always, to the staff at WFRC, thank you for your expertise in helping to guide this discussion. If any of you, I mean, Andrew put out the invitation, if there's any of you as members of the Regional Growth Committee who would like to be part of any of the Wasatch Choice Partnership working groups, we would love that. You know, we would love to have you participate in that. And I hope that we are able to have our League and Wasatch Choice and APA fall conferences. I hope we're able to have those in person and anticipate some form of that, and look forward to, first of all, being with all of you together in person, and also moving forward unified with all of these organizations. And organizations are made of people, with really good people who care about making sure that we do the right thing and get this right. I'm going to move on to item 6. Our next Regional Growth Committee meeting is scheduled for August 20th, 2020. The format is, along with everything else going on in life right now, undetermined. It could be just like this. We might see each other this way again. There's a chance we might be able to meet in person. We don't know yet. So stand by. We'll see what happens and let you know. But I'm grateful that this is working, and it is a lot easier doing this with video than it was last time with just audio. So we've already come a long way. This is a good thing. August 20th, 2020 at the same time, and more information will be sent to you by email. If anybody has anything else to bring up, now is the time. Otherwise, I'm prepared to accept a motion to adjourn.
I'd like to bring up one additional consideration, which Andrew and Ted and I have discussed, and I've discussed with other people. This is Reed. The New York Times has run a number of articles suggesting that in light of COVID, that there may be a growing demand for less dense development, which, you know, runs in the face of our center-oriented, polycentric plan. We are doing research on that to see if the COVID virus spreads faster in dense places, and the answer so far is no, and whether the death rates are higher in dense places, and the answer so far is they're actually lower in dense places, probably because of better health care in cities than maybe in some of the exurban areas. But that seems to me kind of goes on Ted's list. We've got a certain increase in telecommuting and a range of that. At some point, if the New York Times articles are hitting the nail on the head, this is going to be sort of an issue in the future. Do we develop in the most compact possible way, which leads to more interaction and faster transmission, or do we kind of spread out a little more? So that's a really big picture, long-term question that I think that the Regional Planning Council is going to have to wrestle with at some point. It falls in that list somewhere, and I think that we're going to want to discuss it, see what the final numbers are for deaths and spread of the virus, and then possibly if there is a push toward lower density, think about our plan and what that implies.
Thank you, Reed. That's a good point. Appreciate that and look forward to getting more data and seeing what happens. And I don't know, it's hard to determine or even speculate how far down the road the number of deaths will be final. I don't know if it'll ever be final. You know, we'll see. That could take some time, but this is a good point and something that we will certainly continue to discuss as a group, I'm sure. Thank you. Okay. Is there a motion to adjourn this meeting? And then we will just look forward to reconvening in August.
I move to adjourn.
Thank you.
Okay.
Second.
I heard a couple seconds and I don't know who they were. Okay, well, we're gonna take the second from Jeff Scott. So we have reviewing and Jeff Scott, and I'm repeating this because of the format, how we're doing this. So anyway, all in favor of adjourning this Regional Growth Committee meeting?
Aye.
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 I'm not even going to propose. Thank you all.
Thanks everybody.
Bye everyone.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Good to see all of you.